Today on the Callahan Podcast, well, he's going against the best team in the NFC. He's going against the MVP. He's going on the road, but somehow nobody is picking against Tom Brady. Lots of people rooting against him, but nobody is picking against Brady in the NFC title game. We will break down and analyze the conference championship games and the inauguration. Biden's speech was awful, but then Chris Wallace, he loved it. Chris, how long is Fox going to let Chris Wallace damage the brand? Do I have to love poetry? Do I really have to love poetry? I like music. I like speeches. Do I have to love poetry? The press secretary, new press secretary, man, she was in the line of fire yesterday. We're going to get the answer to the big question from the media to the new press secretary. Is Joe Biden going to change the color scheme in Air Force One? We will play you that question if you don't believe me and get into all the highlights from the big day yesterday on the Callahan Podcast, brought to you as always by DCU. Do you love your car but hate your car payment? No problem. Refinance your car today with DCU and they can help lower your monthly payment, lower your interest rate, or both. Applying is easy and their loan experts will help you find a loan term, the payment that fits into your budget. Get out of that high rate loan and get the interest rate and the payment you deserve from DCU. Learn more and apply today at dcu.org/refinance. Insured by NCUA. All right, Colin, let's do this.
This is the Jerry Callahan Podcast.
All right, the NFL made it through 256 regular season games and two rounds of the playoffs so far. We got another round Sunday. It's down to one day. I like this day. One day. The 3 p.m. kickoff and the 6:40 kickoff. Two great conference championship games. And we used to always talk to my friend Kerry Byrne around this time of year in the old days. He was like ahead of the curve. You were ahead of the curve in a lot of ways, Kerry, the founder of Cold Hard Football Facts. I looked at your website last night and I said, There's 1,000 people trying to do what you do, what you've been doing for how many years? Yeah. How many years have you been
doing? Started in 2004,
actually. 2004, yeah. That would be the
17 years
second or third Patriots Super Bowl that you...
Yeah, you know what? I started it actually in the wake of the 2003 season when they beat the Panthers in the Super Bowl, and everyone nationally was talking, and I was writing for the Herald at the time, but I was a food guy, but I was always a big football fan, and... Everyone was talking the Patriots are boring, they're this or that, and how do they win? They're with smoke and mirrors. And I started looking up, being kind of a stat nerd. They were good in all the same things the Green Bay Packers were good in the 1960s, and the Bears were good in the 1940s, and the Browns were good in the 50s, and the Steelers were good at in the 70s, and the 49ers were good at in the 80s. They were doing all the little things right to win and lose football games. And I created this whole kind of theory of football analysis, and we call them quality stats, and we looked at the stats at win and lose football games, and what we found is they typically go against conventional wisdom. You know, people, the stats at win and lose football games were not the stats people were looking at, and I think we've actually had a big impact in changing the way kind
right.
of
now. Oh, you did with me, and we used to talk about this all the time, and I still maintain that the running backs don't matter. I'll say this, running games matter. You got to run the ball at times, like when have a lead and you want to kill the clock, but running backs, I look back now and see running backs, you know, taken first in the draft or taken, you know, top five or getting paid huge money. Like in the old days, they don't do that anymore because they've come around. Maybe they were reading Cold Hard Football back. I realize running backs don't matter, but one, and you were right in the middle of all these, you know, talk radio, sports radio debates, including, you know, the quarterback debate we had for years, the best ever. Obviously, Brady put that debate to rest a long time ago. Yep. And I heard somebody, I think we talked about it briefly, talking about the best postseason quarterback the other day. Who's the best? I'm like, what? I mean, there's it's a ridiculous argument. You got Brady with now playing in his 43rd postseason games, 14th conference championship, all the numbers, wins, touchdowns, everything. I mean, there's just no, you can say that, you can make that, you can, I mean, an NFL Network might have to fill the time and say, who are the best postseason quarterbacks? But there's no debate there.
Let me give you my Tom Brady ball washing stat of the week, Jerry. if you bisected Tom Brady's postseason career into wild card and divisional games and conference title games and Super Bowls, so two separate postseasons, he'd still rank number one and number three all time in postseason victories. He had 17 wins in the first two rounds, wild card and divisional. Uh-huh. Yeah, Joe Montana would be number two with 16, and then Tom Brady would be number three with 15 wins in the conference title games and Super Bowls. He's third all time. He's second all time just in Super Bowls and conference title games. He's lapping the field of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
And if he wins Sunday, and we what is he, a 4-point underdog right now? I had that in front of me 1 second ago. You got the
I should know.
He's a 3.5-point underdog. Yeah. I can't imagine betting against him. Although, you know, he's an underdog. Rodgers is great. They're at Green Bay. The Packers are the best team in the conference, even though the Bucs beat them badly earlier in the season. I couldn't bet against Brady. I couldn't root against him. I can't imagine him having a game like Breeze had the other day, even though he's had him in the past, you know, one or two in his 20-year career. Yeah. And even though the odds are against him and it's on the road and all that, he's not going to throw three picks. He's not going to fumble in a key moment. He's not going to choke. So you can just cross that off your list. The Bucks might lose, but the quarterback is not going to fold under the pressure.
He's still kind of, through all this, Jerry, everyone agrees he's the best of all time. He's still kind of underrated. like they should be the favorite. They have Tom Brady. They should be the favorite to win the Super Bowl. Well, Tom Brady is going to play better than Aaron Rodgers.
Packers beat up on the best defense in the league. Like, you know what I mean? So
fair enough. But who, you know, Aaron Rodgers, there's a big discrepancy between his statistical career and his postseason performances. Same thing with Drew Brees. These guys aren't there habitually, you know, typically in crunch time for a reason. And they, like, Dan Marino is a classic example. You know, everyone said he had a bad defense. Dan Marino twice played with the number one ranked, you know, top scoring defense in football in his career. I think Tom Brady's done it twice as well. Dan Marino lost playoff games when he threw interceptions. Two or more interceptions, he was 1-9 in the postseason. 1 or 0 interceptions, he was like 8-1 in the postseason. Dan Marino lost games because he played poorly in the postseason. And Aaron Rodgers has not lived up to that, you know, those amazingly, you know, record-setting performances he has in the regular season, you know, the highest rated passer of all time, and although Patrick Mahomes has since passed him, you know, those performances have not been there in the postseason. So I, you know, just blindly looking at all factors, and there's only one guy in the field that matters in the NFL. We saw that with how the Patriots' fortunes changed this year, and the Buccaneers changed, you know, fortunes changed this year. It's a one-man league. It's a one-man game. And Tom Brady is more likely to play better than Aaron Rodgers.
I'm looking at the postseason numbers. Rodgers has got 42 touchdowns, 12 picks, and a 100 rating in the postseason. Brady's rating is only 90.
Yep.
He's got 77 touchdowns, 35 postseason picks in 43 games. Doesn't matter. He looks good. He feels good. He's remarkably healthy. He doesn't appear like Breeze, like he's limping into this game. And I think I said this the other day, most people would dread the idea of going on the road, going to Green Bay, 20 degrees, hostile, not a big crowd or anything, but doesn't seem like a pleasant experience for an opposing player. I think Brady wakes up with a bounce in his step and says, I can't wait. He loves these moments. Yep. I'm not saying Rodgers doesn't, though. I would never guarantee Brady's going to win this game.
No, Rodgers, I'm with you.
Pretty damn good. I hope he wins. I'm rooting. I'd like to see a Bucks Bills Super Bowl. Those would be the two underdogs. It just seems so unlikely, and I think the Bills are the easiest team to root for. I'd love to see Josh Allen in a Super Bowl. But you've said this for years, and you convinced me a long time ago that you're right. What you say, one man league. We don't put too much importance on the quarterback position. Some people, you know, they will say that because they think it sounds good. Oh, it's just one player. You got to run the ball and stop the run and establish, you know, and all this nonsense. If you have a great quarterback, you win. If you don't, you don't. Which is why, you know, the Patriots at 7-9 is not that bad because their quarterback sucked and they somehow won 7. Maybe without Belichick, maybe without the coaching staff they had, maybe they're, you know, 5-11 or 4-12, like Texas. The Texans had a much better quarterback than the Patriots. They won 4 games.
Yeah. No, listen, you know, it was predictable what would happen to the Patriots without Tom Brady. It just was. And it doesn't mean Belichick's not a great coach. I mean, They I think they threw 11 touchdown passes all year. Like, I think the last time the Patriots threw that few touchdown passes, Rod Rust was the coach.
Are you sure? I think it might even go back before
that. No, I looked it up. I think it was Rod. I think it was at whatever, you know, one of those terrible Rod Rust or Dick McPherson seasons. So we're going back 30 years, you know? I mean, that's almost impossible to throw any 12 touchdowns in a game. So they won seven games in spite of, you know, historically bad quarterbacking for the franchise. But it's not just this year. It's not just Brady, and it's not even recent. We know you and I have talked about this stat a million times. It's passer rating differential. Which
I was going to get to. I heard somebody the other day, Kerry, didn't give you credit. They were making their picks, and they said it's all about defensive passer rating. And I said, wow, where did I hear that before?
Yeah.
Are you still a believer? Is that still the number one barometer when you look at
the game? You go back all the way to the dawn of the title game era in 1933, okay? You know, before the very first title game was in 1933. Since then till today, 40% of all NFL champions, so you know, 4 out of 10, were number one in that stat, Jerry. Number one. So if you just looked at that one stat, you would be able to name 40% of all NFL champions over the last, you know, 90 years, whatever it's been, 67, 88 years, just by looking at one stat. There's no stat in all of sports that's more indicative of postseason success. So it's remarkable, and it's always been that way. Even in the 30s and 40s, it was that way. People think teams, you know, grounded and pounded. That's not really the case. It's not there's a mythology around football in the 40s that's not really reality. You know, the Bears dominated the 40s because Sid Luckman was the most efficient quarterback in football. That's why they won. And it's the same thing with the Browns in the 1950s and Paul Brown and those innovative offenses. They had Jim Brown, but Jim Brown only won one title. They won all their championships before Jim Brown got there. You know, I mean,
who's got the best defensive passer rating? Or
you know what? I'm going to look that up while we're speaking because I don't know it off the top of my head.
You want a fun stat, and I know this is what you live for, but it's not a very complicated one, though. And I'm looking at it. Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers had 40 more touchdown passes than Cam Newton.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Rodgers had 48. Cam Newton had 8.
So this is actually a bit of a down year. You know, there are anomalous years. I'm looking at it right now for defensive passer rating. None of the top four teams are still alive, believe it or not. So Buffalo is number 5. Kansas City is number 10. Green Bay is number 14. And the Buccaneers have got there with the 18th best pass defense in football. So Brady has won in spite of this is a historically bad defense to reach the championship game, if we're being honest.
So
we'll see. But, you know, this is – it looks you know, going through it, it is a bit of an anomalous year. But if we look at passer rating differential, number 1, Green Bay, number 2, Buffalo, number 4, Kansas City. So three of the top four teams are the only outlier are the Saints.
So why would you pick Brady if he doesn't have the best defense? He is on the road. He is facing the MVP.
I'm not. I mean, all things being equal, the Packers are a better team. But you just said
you know, Brady should be favored. Why would you favor him?
Would it surprise you if Brady played better than Aaron Rodgers?
Of course not. But it wouldn't surprise me the other way either. I mean, they're both great. Yeah. Rodgers is better than Brady now.
The Packers are a better team, and the absolutely overall are a better team. I'm just saying I wouldn't bet against Tom Brady. I mean, you'd be foolish. And
lots of people will.
I know. I don't
think billions bet against Tom Brady this week or bet on Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. But it is amazing. I'm looking at how did the Patriots win seven games with Cam Newton, 8 touchdowns, 10 picks. Aaron Rodgers, 48 touchdowns, 5 picks. He had half as many picks as Cam Newton. Brady, 40 touchdowns. He had 32 more touchdowns than his predecessor in New England. But anyway.
By the way, one of only 10 quarterbacks in history to throw 40 touchdowns in a season. And he's one of the 10, you know, because he did it in 2007. At age 43, he had a historically productive passing season. It's remarkable. You know, and we all make fun of him for eating avocado ice cream or whatever it is, but obviously whatever he's doing works. You know?
Brady just will always find motivation to get up for the playoffs in games like this. Like, have you seen some of the interviews with Aaron Rodgers this week? He looks like he just smoked like 10 joints. He's like the calmest individual. Like I don't even know. He just looks so laissez-faire right now. And he's playing so dominant that whatever he's doing is working.
Yeah.
But Tom Brady,
all I see is those friggin' ads of State Farm or whatever they have with the Rodgers price. So
the memes that Rodgers Mahomes would be amazing for
State Farm. I saw someone describe Aaron Rodgers. I forget the writer. It was some story I was reading. Called him the coolest kid in the room. He just has that kind of
so calm,
cool for school type, but almost douchey cool though. You know what I mean?
The video was going around yesterday of him at the combine when he was coming out of Cal and, you know, dropped to low in the first round. But same thing. Very cool. He was talking to they had like a supermodel or someone doing the sideline reporting. And he was like flirting with her. He looked the same, by the way. He looks the same now as he did then.
He has a pretty good lineup of who he's dated. His history is pretty good. So
is he still with – is Danica Patrick still with him?
That's probably why maybe she's a little wacko, and that's probably why he's in the mindset.
No, maybe. And you know how crazy you have to be to drive a race car for a living? She's nuts. I mean, you think she's afraid to do certain things in your bedroom?
No. I just mean she might be legit. She's crazy.
I think he likes the crazy ones. Yeah, some people.
Who's his girl right now?
I don't think I haven't seen anyone, but who was the woman who was in one of those Marvel? We're going to talk about Avengers later, right? Yeah. There was who's the chick? She used to be on The Daily Show. She was a correspondent. She's a big Hollywood actress now. And she is
Olivia.
But yes, Munn. Olivia Munn.
Who's not the best Olivia. Olivia Culpo is. She's spectacular, but you know, he's doing okay. Aaron Rodgers doing okay. And he's the only guy around Brady in Brady's universe who's not like falling apart or growing old before our eyes. Everybody else yesterday, Philip Rivers, who was drafted 4 years after Brady, retired the way, you know, normal guys retire. He reached the end of the road, had a great career. He's going to the Hall of Fame along with the two other guys in his draft class, Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger. But we've talked about this, you know, for weeks now. All these guys are doing what you're supposed to do when you're 38, 39, 40, in the case of Breeze, 42. They're just falling apart. They're getting old. They're unable to make the throws that they used to be able to make. And Sunday was the best example when Drew Breeze just struggled, had the worst game of his life. And it was obvious they didn't throw deep. You know why? Because he can't. He's got broken ribs. He's got, you know, all kinds of aches and pains.
Brady had his best deep throwing year of his career.
He had his best weapons he's had in a long
time. Yeah, absolutely. You ever look at old pictures like Y.A. Tittle? He looked like 80. He was like 35 years old.
The only picture you ever see is you get blood pouring down his face.
I think that happened against
the network. Steelers, yeah. 2 weeks ago, the network, or 3 weeks ago, had the picture of Brady and George Blanda, the only two guys to whatever, throw a touchdown pass at the age of 43. Brady looks like he's 30, and Blanda looks like he's 60.
I know you're a bit of a historian, Jerry. You you know who Ernie Pyle is, a great World War II correspondent. Sure. You look at Dave. I don't know if you can pull him up, but you look at Ernie Pyle, this famous World War II correspondent. He was one of the most famous people in America in the 40s. He was killed at the end of the war. He was only 43 years old. He was Tom Brady's age. If you look at this guy, if you have your listeners Google it, he looked 80. And, you know, these people back then lived tough lives. I mean,
there's a lot of good ones. You know how old Carol O'Connor was when they started All in the Family, which is 50. All in the Family debuted 50 years ago last week. The greatest television show ever. I dropped the ball.
Ernie Powell. He's Tom Brady's age in that photo. He died at 44.
George Blanda. I mean, I realize George Blanda hung on because he kicked, but George Blanda looked the same way. You know, he's gray. Probably had a cigarette, you know, high cup in a cigarette when they took the picture. But Carol O'Connor was 46 when they started All in the Family.
Are you kidding me? How about Robert Shaw and Jaws? He was only like in his 40s. Quint, right? He seemed like a grizzled old salt in his 60s. He was like 45 years old.
Really? Yeah. The amazing Cullinane's 62.
Yeah. I'm the Rob Lowe of podcasting.
Modern technology, and I'm telling you, Brady. We can make fun of him all we want with the pliability and everything else, and never strawberry and doesn't drink much or whatever. But whatever he does is remarkably effective. Even if it's Botox, even if it's plastic surgery, whatever he does, he's the greatest advertisement ever for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And
you know what? He's not going to get old. He's going to get hurt. I've always said, kind of like Breeze, kind of like Peyton Manning. Guys get hurt. I don't know if Phillip Rivers was hurt or he just feels like he's got other opportunities, but he was not bad in his final year. But he's made a lot of money. He's like, time to move on. That's the way it's supposed to work. Brady is – we've moved on. We've crowned him the greatest ever. You have made that case for years that he's the best ever, better than Montana, clearly better than Manning. But now he's moved on to another – achievement, and it's being the biggest freak, to being the guy that defies the odds, defies age. So I think in his mind it's a whole new challenge. Can I do this when others are, you know, on the sideline, up in the booth, you know, guys like Tony Romo up in the booth who are much younger than he is and retired a long time ago. I think that's what motivates him now, to just defy gravity and time.
Another Tom Brady ball washing stat, and these things are Ruthian. And you know, when you say Ruthian, Babe Ruth was hitting 60 home runs when teams hit 12.
Right.
Right. I mean, you know, back in their early 20s, right? He was doing things that still stand the test of time.
I believe the first year that he led the league, he had 11. The first time he led. Yeah. And then a couple of years later, he had 60.
And he had multiples of other teams. Like other teams had 12 or 15 home runs that year. His win loss differential, I love this. I think he's plus 181. He has like 261 wins and 80 losses, plus 181. Only two quarterbacks ever have won 181 games. Like his differential, it's, you know, Peyton Manning, 200 wins, Brett Favre, 199 wins, and I think Brees is around 181. So the difference between his number of wins and his losses is like greater than the number of wins of any quarterback ever. And I know I'm not explaining it well, but it's just so vastly different than anything that came before. It's unbelievable. You can't.
Right. He's got 42, is it 42, 43 playoff games. Number two, the couple of kickers in there, but then Jerry Rice is next with 29.
Yeah.
Well, just playing in games, and he's won 32 playoff games.
Yeah.
Rice played in 29. So you can use that stat where his differential, wins over losses, is greater than anyone else's wins. In so many examples, and you know what? He's not going anywhere. He's going to go to the playoffs again next year.
Nine out of the last 10, this entire decade, the second half of his career, he's been in the title game every year but, 2018? No, but last year. Every year but last year, he's been in the conference title game.
Nothing. I mean, if he wins Sunday, he goes to his 10th Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That means in half the seasons he's played. Half the seasons he goes to the Super Bowl. I believe Rodgers has only gone to one, right? Is Rodgers –
One
Super Bowl, and then you got other greats, all-time greats like Breeze. One Super Bowl ring, one, and that's not enough. You can't be in the conversation. I realize nobody's in the conversation with Brady, but you can't be in the conversation with Brady and Montana, and I guess Manning, even though he did nothing when he won his second, with just one Super Bowl. I mean, it's just not enough. And then you got a guy like Rivers, who I think is a Hall of Famer, with no Super Bowls, none, never played one. But, you know, he's got all kinds of big numbers, gaudy numbers, and people like him, and I think he'll get in, and that's fine.
Rivers retires number five all-time in pretty much everything, attempts, completions, yards, touchdowns. One of those, he might not be number five. But anyway, he's basically a top five volume, you know, passer in the history of football. He would, when he entered the league, those all would have been the NFL record. Like, he surpassed Dan Marino in everything. And with nothing to show for it, that's the remarkable thing. It's the ability for Brady to get it done in the biggest games over and over and over. And as a fan, you get greedy, and I'm sure he's greedy. I remember, and I'm not really a Patriots fan as much as a football fan, and I am a Brady fan. I got Buccaneers season tickets this year, one of the worst financial decisions I've ever made. But me and my buddy Alex, who wants to play Braintree Brewhouse, we said, let's go to see the Buccaneers this year. And of course, you know, I think we can carry him over the next year. But anyway, you know, when the Patriots won that Super Bowl in 01, you're like, oh, you never thought you'd see the Patriots win the Super Bowl. This is great. And then every year, I want him to get another one. I want him just to pad the stats, and say I witnessed it and saw it. Not only saw it as a football analyst, kind of envisioned it and was ahead of the curve and told people, hey, you're missing the boat. He's not just some dink and dunk passer. This guy's a transcendent performer. And it turned out to be transcendent beyond anything any of us ever imagined.
And I think the greatest player ever in NFL history, but also the most hated, not because he did anything, not because he's like, you know, Tyreek Hill or Kareem Hunt and, you know, beating up his wife. And just because he frustrates everybody so much. I mean, the idea that he could go to a Super Bowl in his first year in Tampa at the age of 43, just imagine how many people, not just fans, but media people and, and players and former players are just frustrated as hell, saying, damn, him again. Yeah. And they'll be invested in the week, Super Bowl week, in the game, just because they want him to lose, because they get so sick of watching him win. But you're right. I'm looking at Philip Rivers, and he'd be considered, if he put these numbers up 20 years ago, you know, pre-Brady and pre-Manning, Breeze, he'd be considered one of the all-time greats. I mean, one of the greatest ever. He's a career fifth all-time in passing touchdowns, fifth in passing yards, 12th in rating, all kinds of career. Yep.
421 passing touchdowns, if I remember correctly. Marino at 420, retired number one all-time. And that, to us guys our age, was but we never thought we'd see that again.
Right. But
by the way, Brady's going to – he's already the only 600 touchdown passer in history, including postseason. He might throw for over 700 touchdowns in his career, including postseason, when all is said and done. And again, Marino, probably including postseason, had like 445.
What were you planning on doing, flying to Tampa every week?
Well, I'd probably go to a couple games and and sell the rest of the tickets. You know, we all have friends down in Florida. So, yeah, that was the plan.
And you're going to renew your season tickets for Tampa Bay next year.
Well, Brady's back. Yeah.
Well, and you think you'll get your money back if you could sell them?
I might be looking at property down there too, Jerry. It's time to get out of Dodge.
You're going to lay down your roots in New York. You're a New Yorker now. But if you wanted, could you get Super Bowl tickets if they go, because you're a season ticket holder?
Yeah, I get the emails. I'll have to look. Actually, that's my to-do list today, is to go look into that. I'm on the mailing list. I got to fight. Yeah, I'm probably eligible for it.
And
you'd finally be able to actually go to a Tampa game that you were planning to do this year.
I don't know
if you can actually go yet. Or you don't know
what are they doing for the crowd? I haven't even looked. Do you know what they're
doing? I don't know. It's Florida, so they'll probably have as many as possible. Maybe fill the place. But that's another thing. It seems fitting that if Brady would be the first ever to win a Super Bowl in his home stadium.
Why not?
No one's ever done. It's the 55th Super Bowl. It's the first time the home team will have a chance to win in the, what do they call that place, the pirate ship or something?
I don't know. I still remember the Big Sombrero. Remember that? Is that what?
Big Sombrero.
That was the old Tampa Stadium. Remember that? It had that weird.
Bring back the all-time greats like Leroy Selman and Leroy Selman. I mean, who else?
That was it, right?
But Derek Brooks. I mean, who do they bring back for like all-time greats? Vinny Testaverde?
Chris, you ever see the old John McKay? Remember John McKay was a great coach at USC in the 70s and became the first coach of the Buccaneers, and he had all these. He was obviously, there were terrible teams. They went 0-26 out of the gate. They went 0-14 in 76. I think they scored 103 points that season. Think about that.
In the whole season?
14 games. Look it up.
The orange bath mat uniforms.
But they asked John McKay, what do you think of your offensive execution? Yeah. He says, I'm all for it.
Yeah, the execution of your offense, and he said, I'm all for it. Famous line. Yeah. He was good for some good lines, but terrible, obviously terrible.
Yeah. But terrible. I think it was either 76 or 77. It was either their first year they were 0-14. The second year they set out 0-12.
Imagine, like, when this came up, by the way, I was the first to say it. Dave can vouch. I said Brady to Tampa Bay because somebody told us that at the Legacy Club.
Yep.
Said that January 27th, before the Super Bowl was even played. But it seemed absurd at the time. People were like, Tampa, they suck. That's Tampa. Even though they won a Super Bowl, it didn't seem like a place. There was talk about going to Dallas. There was talk about going to where else? Miami for a while. Where else would Brady go? L.A. Chargers, L.A. Rams, whatever. Lots of places he was rumored to be going. It didn't seem to make a lot of sense about Tampa. But let's be honest, we found out why he chose Tampa above all others.
The weather.
When Arian said last week that he lets him coach. He lets him coach. Yeah. By the way, he lets him GM too.
Yeah. So
he got the GM. He got to get his buddy Gronk, his buddy Antonio Brown. He got to play, you know, with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. He got to have this, all these guys, all this talent around him. He got what he wanted. Build his own team, coach his own team. And as a side benefit, as he's pointed out, he doesn't have to spend the winter in New England anymore.
By the way, we're not giving enough credit for this. The Buccaneers were easily the worst franchise in NFL history. I mean, their winning percentage, everything. They had that one Super Bowl run. with a great defense in 02, but otherwise they've been a terrible franchise. This was their best season ever. They scored the most points ever. They had, you know, their second most wins ever. One guy comes in and all of a sudden this historically inept franchise is a legitimate big time Super Bowl contender, and the Patriots go in the tank. And don't forget, in 01, when Brady stepped on the field, he was stepping on the field for a team that was 5-11 the year before, 0-2 in 01, had only scored like 20 points in the first two games, and they go to the Super Bowl. They go 14-3 the rest of the way. He'll have now turned around two franchises in the space of one season.
Yeah, two. Although the Patriots were under with Parcells and Breeze weren't in the, you know, in the toilet then. They'd been in plenty of times over the years.
They were bad. They were 5-11 in 2000. They were 0-2 out of the gate in 2001. That was a bad team, and it became a good team when Brady stepped on the field.
Yeah, one of my favorite stats was the favorite factoids from Brady's career that the Patriots, Brady has had with the Patriots. He had 12 seasons with 12 wins or more. 12 seasons. You know how many they had before he arrived?
Zero.
Zero. They'd never won 12. He won 12 times.
He's averaged in his career 14 wins per season, including postseason. Think of
that's amazing. So
you only guaranteed 16 games, right? Everything else is gravy. He's averaged 14 wins per year, and right now he's on win 13. If he wins tomorrow, he's right there at his career average of, I think it's like 13.9 wins per season.
Wow.
That's unbelievable. He's literally the winningest player in the history of North American sports.
I mean, it's not even – if we were on the radio, on Boston radio right now, we'd ask the question, is New England pulling for Tom Brady? Because it's the most predictable thing you could ask this week. It's not even a question, right?
I don't think so. I mean,
what do you think? My friends are not. They're anti-Brady.
That is insane. Then you're kind of a crazy person. You hang out with crazy people. That's just it's the dumbest thing. The guy has done nothing.
I agree.
Yesterday, I heard on the radio they're talking that like the reason that some people are against Brady is because he's like he's flashy about the fact that he's in Tampa Bay. He's got a boat and there's pictures and it's like who gives a shit?
Yeah. I said this Sunday when they showed after the game that he went out on the field with Drew Brees' wife and kids and had a moment and threw the ball to Brees' sons. And I said he just always does everything right.
Yeah.
I mean, he does everything right. The only time he got in trouble was, you know, taking air out of a football, which was absurd. And we talked about that for decades.
Yep.
Or, you know, maybe that someone handed him a Make America Great hat and he stuck it in his locker and laughed about it and said, yeah, it'd be great if Trump got elected. He'd put a putting green in the White House. He didn't take it seriously. He didn't support him. He didn't care about it. But, of course, the Trump haters wanted to lump him in with Brady in with Trump so they could hate him even more and pretend that he was a MAGA guy. And as I lived through, he talked about it a couple of times, laughed about it, and then he realized that these people take no prisoners and they were going to try to ruin his life because he, you know, supported, because he used to play golf and used to be friendly with Donald Trump. So they tried to ruin him, but you can't come up with anything he did wrong. I mean, I'm not even talking about beating up his wife.
Yeah.
I'm talking about.
You're talking about a miscue at a press conference that he says the wrong thing.
What a miscue would be when he said that the fans should get lubed up.
Lubed up. That was
get lubed up before a game.
Well, what was that, 15 years ago?
Yeah, like 15 years ago. Or he said, and I was there for most of them on the radio with him, and he said, the Jets suck. I hate the Jets. And people, the language or whatever. He used to swear every week, by the way.
Yeah.
A producer would have to like bleep it, but he would drop F-bombs. He's got a salty language.
Oh, but hey, but by the way, the big debate down here in New York is comparing him to Jeter in terms of a transcendent figure who won championships, who was a clean living guy, at least in terms of reputation. And where do you guys see that? I mean, Jeter is kind of like, I remember him getting a standing ovation at Fenway Park at the end of his career.
But Jeter, but Brady's Babe Ruth. Brady's the greatest player
ever. I agree.
Jeter's not the greatest player ever. He's not even like top 10 ever, is he?
No, but in terms of their public perception, it's like the all-around good guy winner.
And he's wonderful, and he's, you know, did a great job, and he handled the pressure in New York as well as anyone, but he wasn't even the best shortstop on his team at the end. You know, the guy playing third on all the steroids, that guy who was at the inauguration yesterday. I love the Alex Rodriguez up there with, and all you have are like ex-presidents and first ladies and senators. And then you get the people doing the anthem and the poems and all that. And then there's A-Rod. I'm like, what the hell is he in his glory?
He's the anti-Brady, the guy who he's just a total
done dude. Everything wrong.
Done everything wrong. Yeah, yeah.
Incredible talent, you know. Didn't obviously was from the time he was like 16, was earmarked for the major leagues. Top pick. You're right. Anti-Brady would be Alex Rodriguez. Totally superficial. Total phony. I always wonder. We always ask, what will Brady do when he's done? And I even though he works his ass off, he won't coach. Coaching's not. And I don't think he'll announce except occasionally make an appearance. I think he's too big for the traditional routes where he won't run a team. He won't coach. He won't broadcast. He will run his little empire, TB12, and he will hang out occasionally with Tony Robbins or some of his other, Chopra. What's his name? Deepak Chopra.
Deepak Chopra, yeah, yeah.
He'll run with that crowd. And, you know, maybe he'll occasionally, like I said, appear at the Super Bowl to do a show, halftime show. But I think he's too big for the traditional route.
It feels like he's super passionate, obviously, about playing the game. He's never really led on to, like, he's super passionate, you know, talking about the game, per se, or building a team, or, you know what I mean? I've never heard him really talk like that, as opposed to his TB12 shit, where, like, I almost feel like his dream is to be what Peloton is right now. Like, that's his post-career. He missed that by, like, 2 years. If he retired 2 years ago, he'd be Peloton, probably.
By the way, from day one, he's been very he doesn't do the Baker Mayfield ads, the Peyton Manning ads, the Every Guy Next Door ads. You know, he's what, Rolex, and like he's very
Tag Hoyer, not Tag Hoyer,
or whatever. Tag Hoyer. Yeah,
that feeds into the national hate too. He's like global. He's even he's like selective. David Beckham. You know what I mean? Like,
by the way, I follow the Premier League. I'm not way into it, but I can't baseball. I got sick of basketball. I can't stomach. The biggest athlete in the world, Cristiano Ronaldo. Tom Brady, I think, has like 8 million Instagram followers. Cristiano Ronaldo has 250 million Instagram followers. That means one in every 32 people on the planet follow this guy on Instagram.
Wow, I'm glad. It's unbelievable. I'm one of the 31 who doesn't. I only follow soccer to root against the Liverpool Reds. That's the team, right? The John Henry's Linda Pizzuti team.
That's their team. Yeah. He won the World Series and the European Soccer Championship in 1 year. It's unbelievable.
Too bad.
I'm with you on that.
I mean, I don't watch it or anything, but I root for the worst for the Liverpool Reds, just like I root for the worst for the Red Sox because the owners are contemptible people who. You just can't root. Decent.
No, I agree. I'm with you on that. So, Jerry, let me run you through, if you got a couple minutes, on just the impact of one player, okay?
The impact of one player from Kerry Byrne of Cold Hard Football.
So, before we get
to the impact of one great man, Joe Robineau Biden, who was inaugurated yesterday, and we're going to get to that because I have some thoughts, but let's get to your thoughts on one man's impact on a football team, which is not supposed to be. I mean, in basketball, one man is supposed to dominate. In football, it's not supposed to work that way, but it does.
It does. You have a good quarterback, an efficient quarterback. Your scoring goes up. Your wins go up. It moves in lockstep. I've graphed it throughout all NFL history. But here's a couple statistical indicators of the transformation of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 1 year. Last year, they were 24th in what I call intelligence, team intelligence. We have a stat for it, intelligence index. Basically measures your efficiency in all phases of the game. The Buccaneers were 24th last year. They're seventh this year. They're one of the smartest, most efficient teams in football, largely because they're second or third in the NFL in offensive efficiency. They take very few yards and turn them into a lot of points, which was a hallmark of the Patriots under Tom Brady. Now, another indicator that's pretty remarkable is what I call relativity. It basically measures how well you perform relative to the quality of your opposition. So if you average 30 points per game, but you're playing, you know, really bad defenses, it adjusts for that. The Buccaneers were 15th last year. They were a middle-of-the-road team. They were just about average. They were no better, no worse than the quality of their opposition. This year, they're second in the NFL. They are, when you adjust for the quality of their schedule and their opponents, they're actually the second-best team in the NFL. They're actually better than the Packers in this stat. Not by much. The Packers are fourth in what we call relativity. So the Buccaneers have been punching above their weight class all season long. So if you're looking for a reason to give them a fighting chance to win, they've actually – when we adjust for the quality of opposition, they've been the better team this year.
All right, who you bet? You're not picking against Brady. You're going to pick the Bucs. Are you going Bills? Chiefs? Mahomes is playing. I think we all agree now. He's going to rub some dirt on it and play whatever it takes. They're not going to let the best player in the NFL sit out the conference championship game because he got a little bell rung last little dinger last week. So I'm rooting for the Bills, but it's hard to imagine Mahomes at home losing this game if he's healthy. Maybe he's slow. Maybe he's not 100%, but it's hard to imagine that Chiefs offense, that quarterback, that coach losing this game at home.
Let me give you – so I'm looking at the numbers now for the first time live with you, and I am picking the Bills to win outright.
All right.
And here's why, okay? Patrick Mahomes is the best player in football. The guy's magical. So he is a great equalizer. If the Chiefs won 40-10, right, none of us would probably be surprised. But let's look at the numbers, okay? I'm going through here. The stat we look at most, passer rating differential. The Bills are actually second in the NFL. The Chiefs are fourth. The problem with the Chiefs, they have this great passing offense, but their passing defense is kind of a weak link. The Bills are much more balanced, okay? So the Bills are actually better in what we call the mother of all stats. The Bills are number one in total team yards, Jerry. What this is not – people look at – they look at the wrong numbers all the time. Total team yards is all your yards, okay? People just look at, oh, they're number two in offensive yards. Well, that doesn't matter. Total team yards looks at your return game, looks at how many yards you get on turnovers. It puts in yards on penalties. It's the total yards you generate as a team. And the Bills were the number one team in football in total team yards. The Chiefs are number three. And in relativity, the stat I just told you, how well you perform relative to the quality of your opposition, the Buccaneers and Bills were actually tied at number two. The Chiefs were number four in terms of relative performance. And by the way, number one were the Ravens. And of course, it didn't work out for them. So, you know, the stats aren't, you know, they're not locked in stone, but they're indicators of where teams are relative to each other. So if the Bills pulled this out, I don't know what I'm going to look up the number on it right now, but I would not, I mean, I would certainly expect the Bills to cover. It's a big number. But I got three.
I got Chiefs three. Minus three.
Okay, I thought it was
maybe that changes once they say Mahomes is in, or it certainly changes if Mahomes is out, but he better be in. I'm rooting for the Bills, but I love watching Mahomes play, and it just won't be the same. There you go. That's the guru, the founder of Cold Hard Football Facts, who is data driven. That's what you like to say, data driven. Unlike an idiot like me, who just goes with an emotion.
Well, I got to tell you, Jerry, you were one of the first to adopt what we were doing. You know, we early on with Cold Hard Football Facts, you put me on the air. You listen to what we had to say, and you're a tough guy to deal with. If you don't agree, you come after people. You've listened to what we had to say, and you know we back it up, and you've done a lot. You did a lot to help us, and you know this went. You know, we ended up with Sports Illustrated, NFL Films, and you were essential for that. Jerry,
get over it. Not a funny deal.
It's funny that you ruined a lot of the arguments, or you made, you know, at the time it was like, here's why Brady's better than Manning, or Brady's better than Montana, or Belichick better than whoever. And we had those debates every day. And at times we'd go to the Cold Hard Football. This is before Twitter. This is before most of the, you know, the websites, which kind of stole stuff, copied you, popped up. And it was look at the Cold Hard Football Facts.
Yeah.
Forget the emotion, you know, I'm rooting for this guy, I love this guy. Just look at the numbers. And you were making a case for Brady like in, I don't know, 2004,
before the Peyton Manning 49 touchdown season. We came out before the divisional playoffs and said we did the complete and unabridged guide to why Tom Brady is better than Peyton Manning. And it went viral. It went now, you know, when viral was an early thing. It took off nationally. You guys had me on. We talked about it. And the football world laughed. They laughed. They said, oh, this guy's an idiot. He's a homer. And we laid it out in detail, one number after another. And, of course, it proved true. And that one story actually changed my life. I mean, I became, ended up working all around the country covering football, covering Super Bowls and everything on the strength of that one story.
Right, who was the one that said you're a fool, you're an idiot? Who's the
everybody?
Everybody. Name names, Dan.
Remember, I don't even know if he's still around. There was a guy at CBS Sports, Pete Prisco.
Of course, he's still around.
Is he? Oh my God, we battled with him, and he was actually good natured about it.
No, we like him. He's a nut, and he always wants to fight, but we like him.
Into him at Super Bowls, and he was totally cool. He got it. You know, some people take sports too seriously. I mean, people wishing you cancer because you don't like their favorite player. And then Twitter drove me nuts. I remember one time writing, Tony Romo is the highest average per pass attempt in NFL history. And people were like, F you think he's better than Peyton Manning? Go die, you piece of shit. And like, it's just a stat.
And, and you, and you always, and I was right there with you. I think you convinced me of how running backs are overrated, and you can't be taking a running back. Certainly can't take a running back.
Nobody does anymore.
But yeah. You think that not long ago they did Curtis Enos, you know, the running backs who were taken top of the draft. There's a little bit of a resurgence with that, with Ezekiel Elliott and Saquon
Barkley. What is Ezekiel Elliott one? He's incredible. What did Jim Brown? Jim Brown is the best football player of all time. That guy could have played any position in any era. And he won one championship. He led the NFL in rushing 8 times. Nobody could stop him. And the only year they won a championship with Jim Brown was the year they led the NFL in passing efficiency.
Think how rarely the greatest ever won. I mean, O.J. Simpson never won. He won the Heisman, but he had to give it to Fred Goldman.
Yeah.
He never won in the NFL. You know, Walter Payton won once. Eric Dickerson never won. I mean, the greatest ever. Greatest running backs ever, put up numbers, look good, you know, won awards, but never won.
It's all about passing efficiency. You look at the most efficient quarterbacks of all time. Number one in the 60s was Bart Starr. In the 80s was Joe Montana. In the 2000s was Ben Brady. Those guys combined have won what now? 11, 15. They won 15 of the last 60 championships. They've won 1 in 4, just those three guys.
Well, fortunately, we got 4 good quarterbacks, 4 great quarterbacks this weekend. So, you know, who knows? It's going to be fun to watch. The NFL beat COVID because through all this, we've ended up with 2 great championship games and I assume a damn good Super Bowl. But we have to move on, Kerry Byrne, because, you know, yesterday we ushered in a new era, an era of light, not darkness. We opened our souls yesterday.
We did.
And yes, I know. We reached out like the lights along the reflecting pool. We reached our arms out and we embraced our fellow Americans. I feel the love. I really do. You saw the Antifa scum going through Portland and Seattle last night.
Yeah, already rioting.
Feel love. I'm going to say this. Let me do Shake Concrete, and then we'll get to the inauguration and to a couple other things. The final day, the final morning of the never dull Trump era, and I get some criticism for our 45th president as he goes out the door. But first, let's talk about Shea Concrete. You know what Shea could do for you? They could build you a building. Build you your very own concrete building, your very own precast concrete building. They partner with Easy Set Worldwide, and they manufacture precast concrete buildings for multiple applications in a variety of sizes. Shea's been manufacturing precast buildings for over 17 years, and no one does it better. Precast concrete buildings provide the most durable and long-lasting option compared to other modular building applications such as metal, wood, masonry. Shea Concrete manufactures, delivers, and installs these engineered precast concrete buildings as a true turnkey provider from initial handshake through the final installation support. With a focus on cost efficiency and quality control, each of their precast concrete buildings are pre-assembled at their factory and typically delivered and installed in one piece by their experts. You know what makes them better than other buildings? They can build them in the worst of weather because they do it indoors. That's unlike other, you know, wood, metal. They do it indoors, in their big plants. They build you a building. This increases productivity, lowers cost, and gives the customer a legitimate time frame of when the building will be placed on site. To learn more, simply go to SheaConcrete.com or call them up and ask for Frank or Mike. These are the experts in these buildings. They'll tell you what you need. They can tell you what sizes they can build. It's the answer. You need a building? Go for a precast concrete building. Call them today or just log on to SheaConcrete.com. Learn all about their precast buildings. All right, back to Kerry Byrne and Dave Cullinane and me as we talk about the inauguration. And it was all you'd expect. I mean, I was waiting for the slobbering, the sycophants in the media. It's nauseating. We'll get to a couple of those things. But first, just as we wrapped up yesterday, Trump was taking off. Some of the pardons were just so frustrating. I thought he was going to go out and throw a bone to his supporters and stick a finger in the eye of the deep state and pardon Assange or Snowden or maybe some others like that. Instead, he pardons a couple of rappers, one record, Death Row Records guy, and one Kodak Black, whatever it is, both of them hated him. Snoop Dogg was the big fan of this guy, Harris, who ran Death Row Records. Snoop Dogg made a video where he shoots Trump, and Trump pardons his buddy. Kodak Black made a video where he, I don't know what he did, beat up Trump or stabbed him. He pardons him. So he was getting bad intel, man, bad advice. Someone was telling him, and I realized to him it was a way of showing that, you know, he wasn't racist. I'm pardoning lots of black people. Well, what if the black people hated you? Yeah. What the hell are you pardoning them for? And then the former mayor of Detroit, perhaps the most corrupt politician in America, Kwame Kilpatrick, pardoned him for some reason. I don't know. I don't get that one. And didn't pardon, I guess I'll give him credit, didn't pardon the Tiger King, which was good because that would have really pissed me off. And pardoned Steve Bannon, this sleazebag who was arrested and charged with ripping off Trump fans. The biggest Trump supporters of all are the ones that Bannon was preying on because he was getting them to donate money to build a wall. So these are huge Trump fans. These are wall fans. These are Trumpkins. Bannon rips them off, gets arrested, and Trump pardons him. So it was not a good day and not a good morning for the big bad orange man. I mean,
he didn't pardon himself and his family like everybody said he was going
to
do.
That's true. That's true. But he doesn't have to because Joe Biden said we're all going to unify now. We're all Americans. We come together. First of all, we got to get to the inauguration itself. The speech. The speech was boring, banal, mundane, cliche ridden. It was tired. It was slow. It was weak. It was typical Joe Biden. But I guess you didn't see like a big stain appear on his pants where he wet himself, or his dentures didn't fall out, or you didn't hear him, you know, blasting gas or whatever. So that's all it took. He didn't fall down. So the media said it was wonderful. But I have to be honest, I mean, most of these media stooges, the Chuck Todds and the Jim Acostas, I can, you know, laugh and mock them. I admit, Chris Wallace is driving me insane. I hate Chris Wallace from Fox News more than I've hated any media person since, I mean, aside from the ones who've personally tried to ruin my life, aside from them, you know, like people at the Boston Globe, I don't remember ever hating a media person as much as I hate this smarmy puke, Chris Wallace. We know he was in the bag for Biden. We saw it in the debate, the first debate, where he just, you know, wanted to make Trump look bad, asking about Charlottesville and climate change and interrupting. And he was clearly showed his bias, and nobody at Fox would call him out. It was disgusting. But yesterday, as soon as it's over, and again, it was a boring Biden speech, which you'd expect. He didn't, you know, crap his pants, but he didn't. There was no soaring rhetoric. Absurd to think Chris Wallace comes on the air and immediately says the best inauguration speech he's ever heard. And he's been watching these since 1960.
I thought it was a great speech. I've been listening to these inaugural addresses since 1961. John F. Kennedy, Ask Not. I thought this was the best inaugural address I ever heard. Obviously, a lot of this event today, a lot of the
That is, I'm sorry, that is A, wrong. It's just wrong. I mean, he's wrong. I heard historians, even stooge historians that did love Biden, better than JFK, better than Ronald Reagan, better than, and I obviously not a big Obama fan or Clinton fan. You're saying he was better than Obama at making a speech? Reading a teleprompter? No one's better than Obama reading a teleprompter. Hell, Donald Trump is 100 times better speaking, reading a teleprompter than Biden. This guy's on Fox News. Are you guys aware of what's happened to Fox News since the election? Their numbers have fallen through the floor. Now, I'm a loyal Tucker Carlson guy. Tucker is great. But his numbers haven't fallen like other shows. But their ratings have gone off the end of the table. It's incredible, the drop, and it's all his fault. And I'm dead serious about that. That upsets people who are Trump fans, who are Republicans, just average. They listen to that and they know that he's completely in the bag because it's not true. It wasn't the best speech in 60 years. He's just saying that because he hates Trump and loves Biden. The longer Fox News leaves that guy on the air, the more their numbers are going to suffer, their bottom line. They got rid of that Chris Steigerwalt, that tub with the bow tie, who, you know, is another Biden fan. They dumped him. if they don't dump Chris Wallace, their numbers are going to continue to fall. I know. I know those crazy right wing zealots. You know, those are my people.
You give Chris Wallace way too much credit. You really, no.
You tell me, Cullinan, tell me then, why are people bailing on Fox?
People are bailing on Fox specifically because of election night and the call for what was it, Arizona?
That's why they dumped that Chris.
Chris Wallace, I have never once, not in my entire life, have I heard anybody say, "Oh, I can't wait to watch Chris Wallace on Sunday morning." Or hold on, Chris Wallace's normal daily hit on Fox News is today.
But here's the problem. There are people who are much crazier than me, much more passionate, you know, Trump fans. Those people, they need an outlet, and they look at this and say, "I can't do this. I can't give them my time and energy. I'm going somewhere else." And the reason they do it is Chris Wallace. It was that Chris Steigerwald guy, and there are one or two others, John Roberts, but he stirs the passion because they know what he did just there was not say, "I thought it was pretty good for Joe Biden, not bad." He said it was the best ever. That's absurd.
Jerry, by the way, I met with our old Herald boss, Ken Chandler. You probably remember Ken. He's now the editor-in-chief at Newsmax. And they're the ones reaping the rewards here because, you know, if you're a conservative, you have no voice left. There's nowhere to get it. It is so the media is not even pretending to be fair anymore. They're just in the tank. They were openly in the tank. And Fox, they, even if it's just purely a business decision, should cater to these people because there's money to be made at it instead of just becoming part of the cesspool of left-wing media where they're going to be fighting for the scraps, you know?
Believe me, I follow a lot of them on Twitter and I know people and they are like disgusted with Fox. And it's not because of whatever, you know, Martha McCallum or Dana Perino or Tucker or Laura. It's because of Chris Wallace. That piece of crap is pissing people off and they're turning the channel. They're going to Newsmax. I love Newsmax, Kerry. I've been on Newsmax, and hopefully I'll be on more because you're right. People are turning, and they're not turning the channel like hitting the clicker like this. They're hitting it like this. Slamming it, saying, "Get off my screen, you weasel." Finally, someone called him out. Greg Gutfeld.
He did.
On the Five called him out. It was good to hear because most of the people are afraid. Maybe Chris Wallace is tight with the Rupert Murdoch sons or something. They're afraid to challenge him, which is disappointing. If you're going to have an open forum.
Don't you think that's the problem? Like, that's the problem with journalism as a whole right now. Yes. It's turned into opinion and activism at the same time. So Chris Wallace says that yesterday. That news anchor, throw out your like news credential, whatever journalism school you think you went to. Go back at him. Because now, if you're going to act like that on every single news network, now let's just go there. Let's go all in on it. Because
it's true.
You have to wait 12 hours for Greg Gutfeld to say something.
And you're absolutely right because you see that on other channels, on MSNBC or CNN, where they'll say, you know, all Trump supporters are Klansmen. And you'd be waiting for someone to challenge it, waiting for the host to say, excuse me, you know, explain that, back that up. And they don't because they're just all on, you know, like-minded
Chris Wallace hosts a nationally syndicated, this isn't just on like a cable television channel, a nationally syndicated Sunday morning show. You hear about the way that people talk about like Meet the Press or CBS Sunday Morning. Chris Wallace is up there with them and he is then allowed to give his opinion on something on a Wednesday afternoon. It makes no sense to me. I honestly don't even get the business.
And he should be challenged. That's all. You've said it. I've said it for years. Just challenge him. You could say that. But it's absurd. I mean, the host or his co-host or whoever should have said, "What is wrong with you, Chris? That speech was, you know, mundane at best. You know, tell me what makes this the best speech ever." I'll tell you what makes it a bad speech is he didn't have the guts to call out. He called out right-wing extremism and domestic terrorism and white supremacy, which is the new boogeyman. Trump's gone, so Biden's team has to come out with a new boogeyman, and it's white supremacist domestic terrorists.
How about this one? Multiracial whiteness. That's the new one.
Oh, that's a new one.
Multiracial whiteness.
But this, they need,
you're white. Yeah.
They need an enemy. And this time the enemy is made up. Say, "Oh, these bands of white ring terrorists are coming to get us." He says it. He doesn't have the guts to call out China or Antifa. And as he's saying it, Antifa's, you know, marauding through Portland and Seattle. And New York, the night before, New York, they injured a dozen cops. They went to war on cops. And these Democrats don't have the balls to call them out. there is a much, much bigger threat from Antifa than there is from the Proud Boys. But
by the way, it was ironic in the clip you showed, the Chiron said, Biden says politics should not be a raging fire. Meanwhile, there's a raging fire in Portland, Oregon.
They're literally burning flags.
Yeah. And by the way, people forget, nobody knows this. In one of the riots, in one of these Democrat-run riots, funded by people who support the Democrat Party, went out and bought the T-shirts and bought the bumper stickers and flew the flags on their house. 12 cops were shot and 5 cops were killed in Dallas. Look it up, July 7th, 2020. You can't find any information about these cops shot dead in cold blood by Democrats. Okay, let's not forget who they were.
By a BLM supporter.
They shot dead.
By the way, Obama went down to the memorial service and blamed the cops. Said we're all to blame here, including the police.
Jerry, you can't
find the memorial service for 5 dead cops, and said the cops should share the blame. But they were going to be going on this case.
You can't even find info about those cops. The only place you can find info right now is on the Dallas Police Department website, which has a memorial bio of these 5 cops shot dead. When do you hear about this? Why didn't it barely made the news?
All right, we got to get to the inauguration, because I mentioned the speech. It was boring. It was mundane. The anthem was very good, although Lady Gaga thinks it's all about her. She, you know, like it's about the country, lady. Or Gaga, or whatever you call yourself. She's a great singer, but you don't like make the anthem into this performance. The anthem is about the flag and the country, but she's a great singer. And I still think the movie, A Star Is Born.
What a great, I watch it. I don't know much.
I think it didn't work because Bradley Cooper can't keep up. Nobody could keep up with Lady Gaga. Right. It just was, to me, he did his best, but it just didn't work because, you know, she was so much better. But anyway, hang on, hold that thought. I got to talk about our new sponsor, govx.com. That's govx.com. As we all know, uniformed professionals sign up to serve causes greater than themselves. If you've ever served in the military, law enforcement, firefighting, or frontline medical communities, you are eligible for free membership in govx.com, the greatest online shopping site for Americans of service like you. Your job demands a lot from you, from deployments to long shifts and the dangerous situations most people don't have the courage to face. There's a reason why GovX believes service-minded patriots like you deserve special recognition. GovX.com delivers the deals on all the gear you need for your on- and off-duty life. Register at GovX for instant access to discounts on epic brands like Oakley, Yeti, Garmin, Vortex Optics, Benchmade, Danner, and more. The site was built exclusively for the men and women who serve our country and communities. That's why every month GovX supports nonprofits serving the military, first responder, or law enforcement communities. We don't just thank you for your service, we honor it. Signing up is fast and easy and totally free. Become a member today and use code Callahan for $15 off your first order of $50 or more. GovX.com, savings for those who serve. Then you have this poem, 22-year-old Harvard grad Amanda Gorman, I believe her name was. And I guess as poems go, it was good. People were just in awe. They thought it was the... It went on a little too long, and I just don't like poems. I'm not a poetry guy. It didn't rhyme. It was, you know, it was a way to blame, you know, Trump and blame the rioters on January 6th, but do it in poetic form and do it from someone who is unassailable. She's young. She's smart. She went to Harvard. Apparently, she's a great poet. I made one little criticism of this on Twitter because I'm not a poetry guy. I don't want to do poetry. I like music. I like songs and speeches. And it's like, oh, immediately you hate America, you're racist because you don't like poetry. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'm sorry, it doesn't do much for me. Garth Brooks came out. I wanted to mock him because Dave loves him. He was excellent. It was a weird choice playing Amazing Grace because it feels like a funeral when I hear Amazing Grace, and I thought it wouldn't work because he's Garth Brooks and it's a cappella and it's Amazing Grace. But it worked. They should have let him sing two or three more songs and, you know, ixnay the poem. That's my opinion.
He is brilliant. He is a brilliant entertainer. I mean, I'm one of the few guys from Boston who likes country music, and the guy can light up a room. I mean,
Amazing Grace, how sweet.
just the voice of an angel. Just literally.
Don't you guys agree that it feels like you're at a funeral when you hear it?
It does. But Garth Brooks, he is bringing the country together one song at a time, and it was evident yesterday.
And he did make a point, like shook hands, or you know, with all the people in front, like with Biden and his wife and his family, and I think you know, Hunter was there front row center, and man, that's like the longest Hunter's gone without a bump.
I should have looked this up before the show. Did you see the thing going around online where when he left, he said F you Pence? Did you see this? Because no. I was driving home yesterday and I heard Dale Arnold report that as if it was fact. There is no shot in hell.
Who said that? Hunter?
No, that Garth Brooks said to Vice President Pence, F you, Pence. There is no
He ran. It looked like a Price is Right where he's running up on stage, running everywhere, and he forgot to say hi to Bush, and he ran over and hugged him.
Yep.
And I heard one anchor say, I think he violated all the COVID protocols right there. He did. And he should be careful because he's a little chubby. But
you mean like telling making a mask mandate and then not following the rules yourself?
Right. Make a mask mandate. You must wear a mask on federal property. And the next clip, he's standing at the Lincoln Memorial without a mask. But whatever. You have 17 executive orders from Biden yesterday. Not one does anything to help hardworking American taxpayers. Not one. It's all about the climate accord and opening the border and stopping the Keystone Pipeline. It's all just throwing bones to the extreme left and the extreme echo terrorists out there. But let's go to, did you watch the poem, Colony?
I watched the poem. It's, It didn't move me. I'm not a poetry guy. I feel like it's awkward. It's awkward. We'll play a little bit.
Mr. President, Dr. Biden, Madam Vice President, Mr. Emhoff, Americans and the world. When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. In the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is.
You know, it goes on.
I guess that sort of rhymed, but so that doesn't do much for me. And I'm telling you, she's one of those people who you just can't criticize, because I didn't really criticize, but you're supposed to be all moved and emotional and say she was amazing. Is that too much for you guys?
She's a very, I've not seen it. I didn't watch it yesterday. She's a very dignified young lady, obviously. But if she was a conservative at a Trump inauguration, today she would be the most despicable human being, Uncle Tom, in the world. And it's just a disparity in the coverage that is infuriating. The first thing I saw when I turned on my computer this morning was about Kamala Harris's wardrobe change.
Right.
Like, this is so... It's literally theater. Democrat politics now are theater. The first thing Biden does is open up the border to 11 million immigrants. Who does that hurt, Jerry? Does it hurt the middle-aged white media guy?
It does not hurt the rich. I'll tell you that. It does not hurt the rich.
It hurts the poor people in the inner city who's going to have their neighborhood flooded with cheap labor, who are already struggling to get educated under Democrats, to find jobs under Democrats. It's only going to hurt the people.
Everything he does. I mean, the Keystone Pipeline, shutting that down hurts working class people. It puts a lot of people out of work, and it raises prices on gas, and it raises our dependence on Iran and Russia. It's a terrible idea, but the real crazy radical environmentalist nuts want it, and he owes them because they were behind.
No, Jerry, you're wrong. It's not the crazy whack jobs. It's the average Democrat. It's now 50% of the population who 20 years ago, we would have thought they were radical nuts. That is mainstream now. Opening, having no national border is now mainstream. The stuff that is now mainstream would have been radical 20 years ago. It's just the rate at which this has happened, the radicalization of the left in this country is mind-boggling. And the way they all get in lockstep is frightening. One day a message out from the politicians, and the next day they're all parroting it. Right down the way, line.
I got to add, before we move on, I got to add, Bon Jovi sucked too, doing a Beatles song. Here Comes the Sun from, what was it, Santa Monica Pier? Is that where he was?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah, it was a
terrible choice for a cover song. Springsteen, I didn't even hear the song because I was so upset that he again was breaking the law. He was on federal property. He was on the Capitol steps or the Lincoln Memorial steps singing without a mask. And he's starting to look his age. He's like 79, 80 years old. He's starting to look his age. Bunch of tired, old, washed up nobodies.
Not Katy Perry, though. Katy Perry killed it. You got to admit that.
I missed Katy Perry, but she does. She looks good. She looks good.
Fantastic.
I guess, and then we had fireworks, which, by the way, have been banned everywhere. You couldn't have fireworks in Boston on New Year's Eve because somehow they spread the virus, or in New York, can't have fireworks because they spread the virus, but you can have it when you defeat Donald Trump and you put Joe Biden in office, then you're allowed to have fireworks. Once again, rules for thee, not for me. We got to get to a couple of, this is a theme that we're going to be sticking with for 4 years at least, is the absolutely shameless media coverage. They're not even pretending. They're not even going to pretend to be media. It's one big team. They have, you know, they have more cheerleaders than the entire, you know, NFL combined. Just a bunch of lapdog stooges, sycophants who are thrilled that their hero, Joe Biden, and they're, you know, they like him, but their real hero, Kamala Harris, is in office with her Chuck Taylors. They can't wait to get in that press room and just get down on their knees and just lick the toes of these people. Yesterday, what's her name? Psaki gave her first press conference. Jen Psaki, the press secretary, an entirely different mood, tone. This is the same place, the same room where they would ask Kayleigh McEnany, when are you going to stop lying to us and attack her viciously? Psaki came out there and it was one just softball question after another. But my favorite, I think you have this one, Cullinane, from a reporter who asked about the color scheme on Air Force One. Do we have that?
A lighter note, will he keep Donald Trump's Air Force One color scheme change?
This is such a good question. I have not had the opportunity to dig into that today.
This was one of the first questions the new administration. Will Biden keep the color scheme on Air Force One? Now, could you tell me one reader, listener, one person in America who cares about that? I mean, it took the Fox guy, Peter Doocy, to ask about the Trump impeachment trial. Will Biden tell him to call that off, seeing how the theme of the day was unity? And Biden could have done a lot if he really meant unity. We know he doesn't mean it. He's part of this new movement that just wants to crush their enemies. He's going to work with big tech. He's going to work with big media, his friends in the media, to completely crush the opposition under the pretense of, you know, going after domestic terrorism. They're going to change the law. They're going to try to destroy people. Anybody in Trump's universe, any of the 74 million who supported Trump, they're coming after you. These people don't care about unity. They don't care about togetherness. We're not all in this together. Biden is leading the charge to just suppress speech and destroy his enemies. Get ready for it. And people like this reporter, I don't even know where she's from, will be asking about the color scheme on Air Force One. What an embarrassment. What a complete and utter embarrassment to the profession. But Peter, you know, Peter Doocy's there front row, and she'll get like one good question every day, and the rest will just be kissing her ass and talking about fashion, the fashion model that is Jill Biden. I got the tweet here. I think I sent it to you, Cullinane. This is my favorite tweet from yesterday. Dr. Biden is bringing American fashion back into the White House, starting with this subtle, sparkly coat. This is from Refinery 21, which has like a billion. They have 1.3 million followers. They cover fashion, beauty, entertainment, and more. This is so silly. I don't even know where to begin, but Dr. Jill is bringing fashion into the White House. The woman who just left that morning was literally a supermodel.
Yeah, I know.
and a fashion designer. She was literally a supermodel. She leaves.
An immigrant supermodel.
Right.
Don't forget, from a third world country, yeah.
And never appeared on a cover and never got a tweet like that, and never got anything. But
you know, the riot or whatever at the Capitol last week was kind of disturbing from a media end. I'm fairly active on social media, and a lot of my friends are media people on social networks. A lot of them in Boston. I was shocked at the the downfall of the industry is so vast. We had people, prominent media people in Boston, cheerleading censorship, cheerleading the fact that, like, not even, like, how about let's have the debate? I don't know a single conservative Republican who wants to shut down debate. I won't have the debate. No. You put a Harvard professor in front of me, I'll go toe-to-toe with
Terry, him. There is none. Get it straight. There is none. There is no conservative calling for more censorship. None. They don't exist. Everybody doing that is calling is coming from the militant left.
Open, but not the militant left. They're mainstream now, Jerry. These are prominent media people happy that someone's voice is being shut off, and they don't care. That to me is a sign of
it. They're cheerleading it.
I know. That's a sign of weakness. That's why, at some level, I'm positive about this, because that is a sign of intellectual weakness. If you want to shut off dissent, you're a weak-minded person. You're not smart. You're not an intellectual. You're not an intelligent person.
If no, you and you if don't you have shut facts. Me off,
yeah.
You don't have the facts. You can't make the arguments. So you say shut them down.
Yeah.
Cancel culture only goes one way. There's only one way, only one side trying to shut people down, trying to take away their book contracts, their record contracts, trying to take away their jobs.
Yep.
Only one side does that. Yep. And it's the tyrannical left. And it's going to get worse. I wish I could say that, you know, it's going to get better. I wish I could say there was really a new president who cared about unity. How easy would it be if he said, I care about unity. Put Trump back on Twitter. Let him back on Twitter. You know, don't cancel, you know, Josh Hawley's book contract. That don't do that. You know, tell big tech to stop wiping out people's, you know, Twitter accounts and banning and suspending people. Tell Jack Dorsey to stop it. Tell Zuckerberg to stop it. Tell Chuck Schumer to forget the damn trial, the impeachment trial, which does nothing. It doesn't affect Trump at all. I mean, it means, I guess it's embarrassing. They don't want unity. They want pain. 100% agree. They're like Clubber Lang. They want pain.
But these people, sooner or later, they're going to eat their own. Basically, all these people cheerleading censorship have admitted that they are now Jack Dorsey's little bitch. And if they disagree with him, then their opinion can be stifled. They have basically said that Zuckerberg and Dorsey and Bezos and all these guys are going to control what you say and what you do and what you think for the rest of your life. They can't be that. Maybe they are that dumb. Maybe they are that dumb. Maybe they're that docile, a group of sheep that they just want to be told what to think. But they have basically said, I am not going to have themselves. They cannot have an independent opinion because it needs to be approved by Dorsey or else we'll shut you off.
Everybody should be scared. They're not, because they don't think it'll ever come for them. But they want Dorsey. They want Zuckerberg to crack down. They want new laws. They feel like this is like post 9/11. We need a new Patriot Act. They want new domestic surveillance laws to go after their, you know, they say the white supremacists. It ain't the white supremacists. They know they're not a factor. They know they don't really matter. They're going after their opposition. Mainstream conservatives are in the crosshairs, and it's going to get ugly. It's going to get nasty. But you know what? In the end, this is what people voted for. They voted for this kind of authoritarian control. And it ain't going to go well. It's not going to go well.
On the bright side, though, I did see him, and this is a good sign. I did see him I want to emphasize the word spontaneously. He spontaneously ran to go talk to two reporters yesterday when he was walking down the street, which was very natural. It was very.
He didn't talk to them. He just said like one word.
One was like, "I'm happy to go home." Would you say that to somebody? Like,
and the guy starts yelling the second question. He just ran away.
Ran away, yep.
And you know, the big story, by the way, the big story from the mainstream, will he be able to bring his Peloton into the White House? Because he's such a fit guy. He wants to get on the Peloton, but the Peloton is a security risk. Right. All right, that is Kerry Byrne from Cold Hard Football. Is that all it is? ColdHardFootballFacts.com?
ColdHardFootballFacts.com. You can also check me out on KerryByrne.com or my business and stuff.
You have to read up before you make your bets, make your picks for the conference championship or the Super Bowl, because he is the most data-driven football analyst out there, and he's been ahead of the curve on lots of things. But you're picking the two underdogs, right? You're picking
if I'm a betting man, I would go I'm not confident in either, but I like there's some numbers in their favor, and usually when you go against conventional wisdom, you make out.
Good, because I'm with you on that one. All right, Kerry, thanks. We will do it again soon.
All right, guys, thanks a lot.
And thanks to Shea Concrete and Allied Paving at DCU and GovX.com. What I miss, Cullinane?
Not too much. A fellow sensitivity training guy, Justin Thomas, by the way. And
I saw that.
Oh, you guys
they're sending him to sensitivity. He lost his advertisers, one big one, and probably others will follow suit. And now he has to go to sensitivity training because he let the little three-word F-word slip, talking about himself when he missed the putt. He apologized up and down. Not enough. He's got to go to sensitivity training, and I'm sure it'll fix him. They will deprogram.
Yeah, we were talking about Tampa earlier. So Arrowhead is letting 17,000 fans in this weekend. Get-in price is $900 right now.
Wow. You're kidding.
Yep, that's the get-in price.
You know what? That'll sound like a full stadium. 17,000 enthusiastic people. Yeah. That's good. And Tampa's got what? They got to have more than that, right? Tampa for the Super Bowl will be more than that, won't it?
Yeah, it'll definitely be more than that. I don't know how many people they're letting in. That's what, 25% of basically Arrowhead, I would assume. I think it holds 75,000.
Something. That's a good number. That's good. As long as there's people in the stands. It makes no sense to not have people in the stands because it's so easy to socially distance. But, all right, we are looking forward. These are two great games. I wish there was one Saturday, one Sunday. But whatever, Sunday's going to be a great football watching day. We're rooting for the Bills and the Bucs, Brady and Josh Allen and the Bills Mafia and all that. But you know what? Truthfully, you can't go wrong. These are four great quarterbacks, four good teams. It's going to be fun. All right. I'm Jerry Callahan. This is the Callahan Podcast, and we will talk to you again soon.
Why am I stopping? No one else stops.
Can I go home?
The Jerry Callahan Podcast.